Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, the show that is live and then podcasted so you can hear it again and again and listen anytime you like. So I'm Pat, and we are going to have a fantastic show with lots of really interesting information. That's the best part I like, is talking to new people about new quilty type of things. So first up is Amy Friend, and her site is called During Quiet Time. I met Amy because we're both part of the ThermoWeb design team, and we were chatting, and she does amazing things. And so she's done a lot of really interesting things that we're going to talk about today. So hi, Amy. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thank you.
Hey, this is... So this is fun, huh?
We'll try that.
We'll try that.
I'm not
okay,
great at public speaking, but I'm going to try to have fun.
You are going to be just fine. You're going to be just fine. Tell me, when did you personally start quilting?
I've been sewing since I was really little. My mom taught me to sew. The first thing I remember sewing was a felt Pooh Bear with my mom when I was about 5.
Aww.
And then I mostly did garment sewing. But mm-hmm. I think about the time I was about to get married in 1998, I decided I was going to make a quilt for our wedding. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to make a quilt, but I knew how to sew, so I just started to make one. And it was a all off-white on off-white patterned quilt where I made each block differently. And I sketched the applique designs first, and then I hand-sewed them all with bits of lace and beads and all sorts
wow.
of things. And we've never, ever used the quilt since. But it was so elaborate, it wasn't very functional.
And that's a big project to just, throw together for your wedding, because like you weren't busy or anything, right?
I wasn't that busy at the time because I had just finished college and I was going to graduate school, and I was living by myself. I had time, so it was something to do to fill my time alone. But it wasn't a very functional quilt. I still have it. I like to look at it, but
it's part of your history.
Then I took a big break after that. Because I was busy working, and then mm-hmm. we started a family, and then I decided I wanted to make quilts for nurseries, and then I started quilting more in earnest about 4 or 5 years ago, I'd say, when I was pregnant with my youngest.
You know, one of the things that I like about your designs, Amy, is the paper piecing patterns that you develop, because I just think they're adorable. Tell me a little bit about what you like to design.
I definitely love paper piecing. I think it just combines a lot of my interests. I was a studio art and art history major in school, and so it's a way of sort of drawing with the fabric, just like applique could be also, but I find something about paper piecing that I really like. I think it's the challenge of how I'm going to break up my design into different little pieces. Mm-hmm. The same part that drives some people nuts, I find I really like that part of it. I also liked math in school, so maybe it all kind of goes together, the precise nature of paper piecing and the puzzle sort of that that is paper piecing I really enjoy. And I like the fact that I can fussy cut little bits of fabric here and there in my designs, and I like to play with curves by making them all out of straight seams of fabric, but closely spaced with lots of little pieces so that it's a nice curve. I really like the challenge of that as well.
I just find that fascinating because I'm actually an appliqueer. So, you know, I look at the things, I think, oh, I could just applique that, you know? So it's
right,
always
yeah.
It's always really fascinating when, you know, it's just our different brains and how we like to think through the process. I love your what is it? Is it the skier that you have? The sort of old fashioned.
Yeah, he was inspired by a vintage ski poster. Mm. I made that originally for a bee that I was in. Someone had the theme of skiing for their month, and I started looking through vintage posters and found an image of a skier that I've worked from.
Mm-hmm. It's just, I mean, those are your images. You sell them. Sort of individually, how do people use them then? Since you're not like selling, you know, for those things, a whole quilt pattern, you have like one skier,
right.
You have knitted socks, you know, they're just sort of individual pieces.
Mm-hmm. They are. I made a garden quilt about a year ago. I think I finished it, and it involved 16 paper piece blocks, and I have all of those for sale. So one could buy those patterns and make the same quilt that I made. But a lot of the other blocks, I tended to just make them when inspiration struck, and they can be used for smaller projects or towards a quilt of your own design.
Okay, so that's how people will buy it. They'll buy like the skier and then build it into another project. I just think it'd be cool to do it by itself, just one block.
Yeah, a lot of people use them, just, you know, one block turned into a pillow, or the knitting sock pattern has been used for a knitting bag a few times.
Perfect.
Now.
Yeah.
Some of the garden blocks have been used individually for garden bags as well.
So besides, you know, these patterns that you do as a pattern designer, you also work with other companies and design with their fabric line. So you work with Moda and do some work for Basic Grace patterns. What is sort of your look when you do that?
Well, Basic Gray works with pre-cuts, so I try to try to design a pattern that will work well with one of their pre-cuts, which is always a bit of a challenge. So the one I'll have at market this year uses jelly rolls, and it's one of my favorite designs. I can't say much about it yet, but it's a fun pattern. And I love all the Basic Gray fabrics, which is a bonus because it's always fun to design with them, because I haven't met one of their lines yet that I don't like.
Oh, I'm the same way. I think their designs are really incredible. Let's switch gears a little bit, because you did a super big project that is called To Boston with Love, and just went to an installation, an exhibit for it at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. Would you just tell me a little bit about the project?
Well, last year, following the Boston Marathon bombings, I received an email from Breen Campbell from Vancouver, and she had had a dream, actually, where she thought it would be nice to have people all over the world sew small flags and send them to Boston and have them on display someplace for the city of Boston, just to show support and love for the city. And she needed someone to help her out with that who would be local to the Boston area, and I'm about 45 minutes north, and she was wondering if I could help her out. So, of course, I said yes, and then we realized all the obstacles that we had to face in just a short time. I had to find a location. We set up a P.O. box, and we started getting the word out. Breen wrote up a great tutorial describing the colors that she'd like to see in the flags, and sharing a couple patterns for people to follow. We started sharing it through all the modern quilt guilds and through other guilds and individual sent flags. So every day for a while there, my four-year-old and I would go over to the post office and collect all the packages from all over the world and open them up and take pictures and share those on Flickr so everyone knew that the flags were received. And meanwhile, I still hadn't secured the location yet, because we started accepting flags immediately. But I needed a little time before contacting organizations in Boston, because many of them were without power for a while, and you know, it was really an emergency situation at that time. But my first thought was contacting the MFA, because it's such a historic institution in Boston. It's a beautiful building. I also worked in museums before, so I felt comfortable contacting them. And I left a message for the director on his answering machine, and about an hour and a half later, I got a call from the PR department, and they were super excited because they had been looking to do something and just didn't know what. And they said they really needed something that was already done, because they just the timeline had to be so quick. And this project was already in the works, so it ended up working out really well. And they offered to exhibit the flags in their Shapiro Courtyard, which is a beautiful glass courtyard, glass-enclosed courtyard. And we ended up collecting 1,756 flags that were strung throughout that courtyard.
That's an incredible number of flags.
Response.
Now that
and
was
they're
the,
hanging again.
Yeah, the initial exhibit was what, like a year ago, or
it was, I'm trying to remember now. It was about 5 or 6 weeks, I think, after the bombing, after the April race.
Yeah.
And they hung through 4th of July, through about July 7th or so.
And so now they're being re-exhibited.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they're hung in a different configuration, but the flags are up again and in the Shapiro Courtyard again for the entire month of April.
That is wonderful. And people can just, you know, when they go to the Museum of Fine Art in Boston, they'll just see these displayed.
Yeah, it's a very central location, so they'll walk through it on their way to other exhibits. And it's actually hanging in the room that you would walk through if you were heading to the Quilts in Color exhibit that is there at the same time.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. I just appreciate you sharing about that and the sort of the backstory behind it, because so many of us saw all that or contributed to it, and it was an awesome project that you got involved with. You also are part of the Modern Quilt Guild in your area, the Seacoast chapter. What goes on in your chapter there?
Well, we're relatively new. I was one of the three founders about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of an offshoot of the Boston Modern Quilt Guild. Our members tend to be a little further north in Massachusetts, southern New Hampshire and southern Maine. And we meet once a month and probably do similar things that most Modern Quilt Guilds do. We have members share techniques. And we just had a photography lecture where we learned about how to take better pictures of our quilts.
Wonderful.
Lizzie House came to visit recently, which was very exciting.
Ah, she's awesome. She does beautiful things. Mm-hmm. So I want people to know where to find you, Amy, at duringquiettime.com at your website.
Yeah.
And you're going to the to the trade show, so I'll see you there.
Yeah, I'll be in the Sizzix booth doing some demonstrations.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We'll see you later.
All right, bye-bye.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have got Carla Krim on from the Scientific Seamstress. I just love that name, the Scientific Seamstress. It's like, you know what, you're going to meet a person that's what she puts her life around. She's so fun. She has a book called Essential Sewing Reference Tool, and I just think it's an amazing guidebook. And so we're going to learn all about it. Hi, Carla. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Pat. It is just so wonderful to chat with you finally.
I know. We've been emailing back and forth. It's so much fun to actually...
We've been Facebook friends forever.
Oh, yeah.
We go way back.
we go way back, yeah. So tell me a little bit about how your life, you actually are a scientist, and how your life as a scientist sort of, you know, morphed and changed into this this sewing, you know, business.
Well, when I was getting my doctorate, I used sewing as a way to just relax, wind down, not think about my dissertation, not think about all the stress of my experiments, just to do something with my hands. This is back in the day when you had shows on like Star Trek The Next Generation and Beverly Hills 90210. So I'd put on my silly shows and just sew and quilt and craft. And it just really, that was my therapy. That was my sanity. And after I graduated from Virginia Tech, actually, I went on to do a postdoc, which is basically, you know, how doctors do a residency after they get their medical degree. Scientists often go on and do a postdoc, which is just a postgraduate experience where you're still under the care of another scientist. So it's sort of a little step in between. But when I was a postdoc, I had a little more free time because there wasn't the stress of writing a dissertation. And so I actually developed a little bit of a sewing business. I started sewing cute little doll clothes with all kinds of embellishments and hand embroidery, little tiny doll clothes, and I was selling them on eBay. And that was just, it was such a fun thing. But the problem was I was way more enthusiastic about that than I was my research. I would be in a high-level meeting just completely focused on what the next design would be, and I'd be sketching, or I'd be planning a quilt, or, you know, not what you're supposed to be thinking about DNA. So when I became pregnant with my son, my husband and I decided that, you know, maybe it could take a few years off and focus on the child and my craft. So life was just ahead of me, fully planned out. I was going to sew little doll clothes and take care of my baby.
Yes.
But it was all well and good until the baby got mobile. And then it was a whole different story. And all of a sudden, I couldn't spend 10 hours embroidering a little tiny dress. I needed to be, I needed things picked up. I needed to be present. So one of the things that I had been asked for time and time again were patterns for these little tiny doll clothes. So I put my computer skills and analytical skills to work and came up with some patterns. And this one is when people were really just starting to explore the PDF format for sewing. So it was great because I could put this information together and then get it out there quickly and inexpensively. And it just, you know, people saw the doll designs and wanted children's designs, and it just blossomed from there.
You know, I do think that your sort of technical background really help with how to lay out patterns.
Absolutely. Yes, how to lay them out, how to optimize the positioning on the page for one thing. Mm-hmm. Also the grading, the way the human body grows as far as children go, it's very mathematical and predictable. And then even us as adults, whether we're growing up or out or in, that's also easy to with some calculations and some math to figure out. And then there's ways to put different pieces together to fit different body sizes. So it really is very experimental.
How neat is that? You know, I never thought about it that way, that, you know, it was actually more of a formula. I do know that people have told me to do children's clothing, that it's a little easier to scale the children's clothing than adults, but, you know,
because they don't have curves.
Yeah, they don't have curves. They're just little straight rectangle people still.
Absolutely. And dolls are the same way. And in fact, dolls don't move or complain.
Right.
And stay the same size. So they're really a good place to start.
So tell me how you decided to write Essential Sewing Reference Tool. This is a stash book publication from C&T, and I just think it's fantastic.
Well, some of it comes from very selfish reasons. There, I have a few go-to sewing books that I've absolutely worn out over the years as far as size charts and techniques. But they're all different books, and there's a few pages that are either completely ratty or missing because I've used them so much. And I really wanted all those elements in one place. And when I was approached by the folks at C&T about possibly writing this book, they asked me, put together your wish list that would be in a book. So it truly is okay, if I'm selfishly going to have this little tiny book by my desk with all the information I need, what's it going to have in it?
Ah.
And so I came up with the outline, and we all agreed what should be in there. They were great with helping me get together the beautiful photography and the really detailed images to show for the instructional components to show those steps. And, you know, this isn't one of those gigantic sewing encyclopedias. This is just the nitty gritty, very, very important information in a compact form. You could put it in your tote bag and go to Joanne Fabrics or your local quilt shop and have it as a reference.
Yeah, and it's spiral bound, which is nice too, because you can get it to lay flat and use it like by your sewing machine as a reference or something like that. I think that's
right. Really, and the paper quality is very, very nice. So you're not going to wear it out by sewing through or the dog stepping on it.
Be able to turn those pages 150 times a day. Okay.
Right.
So tell me, how do people use this then? Is it more like a book that you would go to the index and look up, you know, how to, you know, put a closure on something?
You know, I could see it used at 5 or 10 steps during the sewing process of, say, a garment. You could use it, you could take it with you to the fabric store and to help you choose your fabrics, choose the appropriate interfacing, the proper needle, proper thread. Then once you get it home, it will help you for things like zipper installation, sewing on buttons, which everyone says sewing on a button is easy, and it is, but there are little nuances depending on the type of button that you have, and buttonholes are notorious for being difficult, which they are, and again, it's just a step-by-step thing, and those steps are outlined in the book. So, and then for me, my absolute favorite part of the book are the size charts in the back, because I'm, of course, as a pattern designer, constantly referring to size charts for when I grade my patterns and getting the right fit. But I've separated them into the horizontal and the vertical measurements. So if you have somebody who's maybe an average size but tall for their size and you want to know, well, how long should I make their shirt, this will give you the shoulder to hip measurement, et cetera.
You also have a part in here. Like I started out sewing clothing. So, you know, and I think a lot of quilters are sort of going back to sewing clothing a bit, whether it's for themselves. And I like that you have an adjustment section for the patterns, you know, how to change the pattern to fit yourself. Tell me what that includes.
Well, there you could expand. You'll find a pattern that maybe is perfect in the hips, but too small or too large in the bust. So this would tell you how to separate out that part of the pattern and add in or subtract out where you need to and how to do it in all the right spots and the right movements to make, because you can't just chop it off the sides. It has to be, I mean, when I first started sewing, that's what I do. I just grab it in, you know, and it didn't always, the darts were not in the right place.
Yeah.
So this breaks it down a bit and shows you how to do this.
Now you do have, you also designed for Jennifer Pagnelli of Sysboom, and you do a lot of adult. Yeah, you do a lot of adult clothing for her, and they're just awesome because they're PDFs.
Oh yes, and in fact, a lot of people are often stunned at the number of pages. And please, if you buy one of our patterns and download it, do not be alarmed. We actually separate each side out, and it's tiled so that you take 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper, tape them together to get the size you need. But what we've done is we've separated out the sizes so that we can really add a lot of fitting details that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise in a nested pattern. So we have a guide in there that tells you exactly what pages to print to the sizes you need. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't end up being that many pages, and it's a lot easier than a regular jigsaw puzzle. You just a little bit of taping, you're there.
Yeah. And I think it's always good to know that, you know, you don't have to print the whole thing. It's just that you give a lot of different options in there. So
sure. And the instructions, more and more people are viewing those on their devices or on their computer screen. They don't print the full color instructions, and you can zoom in if you need more detail on a step, and the illustrations really, really give you a bigger picture than just written instructions.
Now, you were telling me that a lot of your friends that have done garments or children things are now sort of moving over into quilting and vice versa. What do you see going on with all that?
Oh, absolutely. It's great because I have a really close-knit bunch of friends, and we all started out with little ones at the same size. Mm-hmm. And bit by bit, they're becoming tweens and teens that don't necessarily want to wear handmade garments all the time. Sometimes they'll humor us and let us make something for them. But so mom's got this great stash of fabric, a wonderful sewing machine. The natural step is to go into quilting.
Right.
And it's neat to see some of them gravitate towards the really traditional quilting blocks, and then some are going more into modern quilting. And like you said, though, there's the converse thing going on where people who are diehard quilters who have never sewn a garment in their life and say, oh, no, I just quilt. They have a grandbaby. They see mm-hmm. these cute designs that are made out of the exact same fabrics they have in their stash. They get on board with sewing for children and then become really good in garments.
Yep. This has been so much fun, Carla. I really appreciate
it. Oh, Kat, I'm so thrilled to finally talk to you, and I hope I see you at Quilt Market.
Oh, I will be there, and I will say hi if you see me running around.
Yes, I have a book signing on Friday at the Brewer booth at 11 a.m. So
perfect.
Definitely come see me.
Thank you so much, Carla. We'll
Thank
be right
you,
back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by BabyLock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have got Nancy Mahoney here again this month to chat about details. We're like to get a little deeper into some of the topics and tips and things that everybody wants to know about. Nancy is a fabric designer, she's an author, and she's just all around amazing, full of tips. Thanks for being here, Nancy.
Well, thanks, Pat. I always enjoy being on your show.
It's really fun to be able to talk sort of in depth, because you and I do this when we teach a lot, but on the show, it's hard to always get in depth. So I thought we would start out a little bit on auditioning fabric. Do you get a lot of people who tell you they're not comfortable with fabric picking?
I do. I think that's really difficult for people. And whether they're beginning quilters or have been quilting for a while, it's something people tend to struggle with.
And I think it's because you and I make a lot of quilts, but not everybody makes a lot of quilts. So when they, pick fabric, it's important. They want to love it, and, so they stress a little bit. Let's talk a little bit first about auditioning, just sort of how you would pick some borders. We talked about auditioning. What kind of fabric you would have for a border for a quilt. What do you do?
Well, if I'm working with a specific fabric collection, sometimes I've already really decided what I'm going to use for the border because I'm probably going to use one of the larger scale prints because mm-hmm. I want that to really showcase that print. On the other hand, if I've made a scrap quilt or a quilt that's out of my fabrics from my stash, I may not know ahead of time what I'm going to use for my border. So then I really want to audition my fabrics. And like you, I work on a design wall. And, a design wall is a really important tool in your quilting room.
Yeah. And people who don't have one, there are some options. You can actually get ones that fold up, so you could put them away. Or, you've seen people put things on their bed or on the floor. But you have to tell me the reason why it's so important to get away from the quilt and look at it.
Well, you get a different perspective when you can look at it when it's in a vertical position than when it's in a horizontal position. It's like when you take a picture, it's going to be, if you're taking a picture of something on the floor, it's wider at the bottom and narrow at the top, where if you can see it vertically, it's all the same dimensions.
Right.
So, I first started quilting, I just had a small bedroom that I was using, and I got a curtain rod and a flannel sheet, and I hung it over my closet doors. And it allowed
perfect.
Me to have a temporary wall, design wall, that I could take down or I could put it up. And I had to pin things to it, but it worked out really well. And that's later I was able to actually dedicate a wall to have as a design wall.
Yeah, and I did a sort of like the insulation boards and covered it with flannel, and they're really light. And so for a long time I would move them. Now they're bolted to my wall. But in the beginning I moved them around so they could be tucked away, and you could cut them to the size that you want. So let's talk about a scrap quilt, auditioning a border for a scrap quilt.
Once I've got my blocks, you can do it when your blocks are not sewn together, but generally I'm thinking about it while I'm sewing my blocks together. So once I've got all my blocks together, I'm going to put them on my design wall, and I pull out the fabrics that I think might work for the border. And then I want to fold them to approximately the width that I'm thinking of, that I'm going to use for my border. So if I'm going to use, I usually start with the inner border and put it up first. And if I want it to be 1 inch wide, then that's how much I'm going to show. I'm going to show 1 inch of that border. And then if I'm going to put an outer border and it's going to be 4 inches wide, I'm going to fold my fabric so it's about 4 inches wide, and then I'm going to pin it on top of that inner border with just a little bit of the inner border showing.
It's important to not put up or to try to audition to the size, because visually, if your inner border is you just sort of stick a fat quarter up there and you've got all that width, it's distracting. It pulls in a lot more color than what will actually appear.
Correct. And that's why you want to even your outer border, try and get it about the width that you want, because you visually need to see how that's going to look.
Mm-hmm. Do you find
–
oh, it's good. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. You.
Okay. Do you find that sometimes, like particularly on a big scrappy quilt, which has a lot of fabric, that you end up with no border?
Yes.
How do you decide that?
I think it's just – sometimes you just know it's done. You can look at it and you say, it's done. And it just isn't going to need a border. To me, a border is really framing your quilt. And it's framing those blocks. Sometimes what I want is for my blocks to float just a little bit. And if I've used one background throughout all of the blocks, maybe the other fabrics are scrappy, but just one background in the rest of the blocks, then I use that same background and create a narrow border. And the advantage to that then is that your prints will show and they'll kind of float, and that design will float in that border.
That's a nice option where you're not putting a big border on it, but you are giving it like maybe 2 inches?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit. It's just a little bit of a breathing room. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I will say, if you're not going to put a border on your quilt, you want to make sure you stay stitch all the way around the outside of your quilt, about 1/8 inch in from the edge. And that's going to stabilize all your seams. So that when you start quilting, you don't risk pulling those seams apart.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very good point because you might have bias out there or something. You just the seams themselves, because we don't often backstitch on each block. So they could easily pop open on the quilting, particularly if you're sending it to a long armor, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, because those get pulled on the frame.
That's the nice thing about putting even a narrow border. You know, you've stabilized all those outside seams, and you can, you know, if you're doing your borders like most of us recommend that you measure across the center of your quilt, you can also help square up your quilt with those borders. But I do a lot of quilts without borders, too, because if you've done a scrappy quilt and you put, for instance, a red border on it because there's red fabrics in your quilt, now your quilt has become red. That
yes.
red fabric has taken over and it's given that quilt a color that maybe you didn't intend for it to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a really good point. People can use the auditioning technique to decide by putting that red border up and see, oh, that's changing the look. Then put a green border up and say, oh, that's not what I want either. And, you know, just check it before you sew it on, right?
Right. And, you know, Pat, I even check it a second time. After I've auditioned and I said, this is what I want. And maybe you put one fabric on the left side and a different fabric on the right side and a third fabric on it. Top so that you can see mm-hmm. different fabrics all at the same time and let your eye decide which one you like better.
Mm-hmm. So right. And take a picture because
then I cut my strips and I put them on the wall again. Because mm-hmm. once you've seen them all on all four sides, it may look different.
That's true. That's true. You can also take, I'm sure you've done this, is take the whole piece of fabric so that you open it up on your design wall and then place the top. You know, so at least you can get two sides at once before you
yes.
cut.
I have done that.
Yeah, so that helps for people who have it. And, you know, at least you get two sides of it then and see how it sort of flows around the corner and how it looks. So another thing that it sort of finalizes our whole quilt and the auditioning process for some people is quite extensive for the binding. What do you do for figuring out what fabric to use for your binding?
Well, sometimes I've already decided. Maybe I've used a narrow border, and I want to repeat that as my binding. Mm-hmm. But other times, I do the same process of auditioning my bindings because maybe I want a different look out there. Maybe I want it to be different than my outside fabric or my outer border fabric. But sometimes I want it to be the same fabric because I want it just to blend with that outer border.
Mm-hmm. So you don't actually see it. So sometimes you actually have something that just sort of melds in.
Correct.
Yeah.
And sometimes
I find that on a small quilt, that's what I want. Something that's small because I don't necessarily want another fabric introduced on the outer edge for a small piece.
Oh, I agree, particularly on a small quilt.
Yeah.
But other times,
yeah,
on a larger quilt, I might want it to have one just a little bit more color or a different color or a darker color on that edge. And so I'll do a different fabric. And, of course,
how
stripes
about
are my
scrappy?
Favorite.
How do you handle, like, a scrappy binding? Do you do those often?
I do. I like scrappy bindings. I just kind of let it happen. And it really works well if you have, say, you've bought, like, a jelly roll. And you haven't used all of the strips in the jelly roll, you can use
yeah.
those for your binding.
Yeah.
Because they're already
pre-cut
to probably the width you're going to use. Mm-hmm. And you can just sew them together and just kind of, I just let it happen. You know,
yeah.
I don't really plan out that I'm going to have them in any certain place. But right. Scrappy bindings are fun.
Yeah. How about for a scrap quilt where you have like a true scrap quilt that has like a lot of colors, maybe you've already decided it's not going to have a border, and so you've got this massive amount of different fabrics and different colors going on. What do you generally use to sort of lock that all together?
Well, that might be where I would put a dark colored binding on the outside. If I have, like, if the quilt is a lot of black in it or dark brown or maybe a navy, I might use that as the binding because it's going to give you an edge. It's going to define
right.
the edge of the quilt. On
right.
the other hand, I might use my leftover pieces and put a scrappy binding on it and just make them whatever width strips I have.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them may be 42 inches, but some of them maybe would be only 20 inches.
Mm-hmm. just do it. Just go just for the total scrap look. It's fun. It's fun to play with that.
It is fun.
Now, I think we have like 1 minute, and I thought we'd just pick up one other topic here. Let's talk about thrifty quilting. Do you have like a tip for people on how to be a little bit more thrifty with their pre-cuts?
Well, when I use pre-cuts, I really try and use them so that I can use as much of it as I can. If I'm using a 10-inch square, then I'm looking for a block where I'm going to be able to cut that up and use it in such a way as to use, you know, maybe 5-inch squares and 2.5-inch squares. And really try and really make as much of that pre-cut as I can. It's a little hard, but it involves that four-letter word, math.
Yeah,
that you
math.
Have to figure out a little bit and use little math skills to see how you're going to be able to cut it and what are going to be your best cuts.
Yeah. Nancy, this has been really awesome. Thanks for being here and chatting, and we're going to chat again next month.
Terrific. Look forward to it.
Yeah, everybody visit Nancy out at nancymahoney.com. This is Pat Sloan, and we'll be back in a minute. Actually, we have another couple seconds, so let me tell you that if you go out to allpeoplequilt.com, which is American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's website, you can look up, we were talking about bindings and what the binding does for a project. If you just go out there to any of the projects that we have at the site at allpeoplequilt.com, when you see a picture underneath, the picture of the quilt underneath, it has a little button that says enlarge, and what that does is let you see, you know, what the binding is. I really like that because sometimes on the little bitty pictures, you can't really tell what, you know, somebody used. And it's nice to see how different designers have decided to frame out a particular quilt. Like right now, I'm looking at one called Scrappy Triangles. This quilt is all half square triangles done in, you know, pretty nice, happy colors with the one side being a cream and the other being prints. But what happened is inside this quilt that was done by Jenny Kahlo, there is a stripe used in half square triangles, and she took that and repeated it on angle for the binding. And this is a borderless quilt, so there's no border on it. There's no inner borders or anything. It's just the half square triangles. It's actually something that would be super for using up your scraps. So it's called Scrappy Triangles. You can just put that in the search box at allpeoplequilt.com. And I want to remind you that over on the blog, you can click down and see what's going on. There's tips every so often on there. So we're going to take a little break and we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. This is the radio show, not the magazine. Owned by the magazine. So, anyways, Tim and Beck, they're a design team, a husband and wife design team that I got to know at one of the trade shows because they design fabric with Moda. Their work is done on all kinds of products, but fabric is with Moda. And Beck McAllister and I had our booths next to each other. So for several days, we got a chance to chat and get to know each other, and I just love their designs. So she's here to tell us a little bit about it. So hi, Beck. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, great to talk to you again.
You too.
So have you always been artistic? You know, because your work is, out there on all different things. And did you like color on the walls as a kid?
You know, I was thinking about that. My mom was an artist. She went to art school. She didn't do it professionally for a career, but I think she always had us crafting and making puppets and cutting things out. I don't think I was significantly artistic as a kid, but mm-hmm. I've always had some kind of creative thing happening in my life to keep me inspired, keep me creative.
So you and your husband, Tim, decided to start a design business. What, you know, how did that come about? What's a little backstory?
Well, we started very naively, actually. which maybe is a good thing. He used to work as marketing director for an outdoor distributing company, and he designed their catalogs and print ads. And he would be going to the print shops to work, you know, on the catalogs. And he saw all of this other product happening at the print shops. And it was craft product. And he thought, oh, that's so interesting. Maybe my new wife of 1 year would like to do something like that for a hobby. Maybe she could stay home and we could have a family. And he came home and told me about it. And I really was so unaware of the craft industry and just how big that industry was. So we just looked up the next trade show that was happening and signed up and went to it. And we thought, well, if people make an order, then we'll start. So that was the beginning. And it looked like we were like a high school science project. We were so naive.
Oh my gosh, I'm dying. That is so funny. You're just like, oh yeah, let's just have this little business and go to the trade show and sell like gobs of stuff because your stuff is so cute.
No, thank you. It's been a learning process.
Now, you both do this full time now. Did you start out that way or do you?
At the very beginning, I left my job and I was the full-time person. Mm-hmm. And that only lasted for, I think, about 2 months. And then he started full-time, too. So, yeah, it's been, I think, 10 years, right around there that we've been working together like this.
Yes. I work with my husband. So, I always love hearing the husband and wife teams. Tell me, Beck, a little bit about your art, what it looks like, the feel of your art for those who haven't seen it yet.
We have a few different styles that we work in, but for Moda, we make really cute, whimsical, kid-oriented collections. We love to just draw things that we think our own kids would love, and it's pretty great having them around because they'll come in, and if they have a great reaction, then we know we're headed in the right direction. Mm-hmm. We also like to, I'd say it's like a retro vintage style, but also trying to make that contemporary twist on retro and vintage. Mm-hmm. And just really, really, we try to keep it really whimsical, I would say.
Yeah, if people go to your Facebook page, Tim and Beck, B-E-C-K, you can see the art there besides your website, which is HIFI-lab.com. So they take a look. And of course, MOTA, you can go to UnitedNotions.com and look up your fabric lines. So your kids, how many kids do you have right now?
We have two little girls, and that's right now and forever, just two.
How old are they?
They're 7 and 9.
Ah, so they're the official wave the design under their nose to see how it's looking.
They are, and they're really great feedback. I think they're pretty good critical mm-hmm. little artistic minds.
Yes. Now tell me the process for designing a fabric line, because I'm sure each of your products, you know, you're designing a little bit differently. But when you're doing your fabric lines, do you start with one image? Are you both drawing? You know, do the kids come in at a certain point? What is your process?
Typically, well, you know, it's been a varied process, because the first two collections that we designed for MOTA had actually already been on paper crafting products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we took those and just made them more fabric friendly. Like,
right.
We've been learning things about fabric, like having non-directional patterns and mm-hmm. what size scale works well for quilters.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, with new products or new collections, and usually we have something that's kind of been in the back of our mind, like something that inspired us at one point, and mm-hmm. we'll make little illustrations, draw what we call a storyboard, which is to just put all of our thoughts on paper and start collecting all of our ideas into one place. And we might mm-hmm. even put like snippets of fabric that we like the color, start coming up with color combinations that we like. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's just so many places in the world that you pick up patterns. And so sometimes we'll take pictures and put that on our storyboard as well. Like, ooh, I loved this pattern that I saw on the background of a wall in a store, just random places
yeah.
that you can pick up. So we put that all in one place. And then Tim is the mastermind on the computer, and he's really the main illustrator as well. I do some of it, but he's the one that makes it happen in the computer. Yeah, and that's
what you're
doing. That's the process.
So, like, Bungle Jungle is the one that has the just adorable animals in it.
Mm-hmm.
How did you know, was there something special that started that collection?
You know, I was trying to think, because that has been a while. I was trying to think how that started, and I think I had just read a book, Water for Elephants.
Mm.
I don't know if you know that book, but
yes.
It talks so much about circus and vintage. I had all of these visions of vintage circus in my mind, and I was kept telling Tim, we have to do something with circus animals. I think that would be so cute. I think that was the beginning of that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always interesting to hear because we all design so differently. The two of you are designing so many things all the time in such variety. It's just your minds must be exploding. Does it feel like that?
Yeah, sometimes it does feel like that. And people will ask us often, do you ever feel like you're going to run out of ideas? And I would say no. I think the opposite. It sometimes feels hard to really focus in on one idea or mm-hmm. narrow an idea down into something tangible that can be turned into a collection.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
hopefully our ideas don't dry up at some point, but
I don't think they do. I think the more you do it, the more ideas you have.
I think you're right. I think that's true.
Now, what did you think back when you went to the first quilt trade show, or maybe you've gone to other quilt shows? I mean, because you came from more of a paper side, mm-hmm. and the projects are often smaller than making a quilt, making some product with paper to show your designs off. What did you think when you first saw the quilt shows?
That was my first quilt show, and I was enamored. I was so so in love. I kept like taking little breaks and running to the bathroom and calling my mom and telling her, "Oh, mom, I wish you were here. You would not believe the quilts."
Oh.
It was amazing. I was just absolutely blown away by the talent. There's so much talent in this industry, and I think it's great to design the fabric, but to actually see the fabric put into a quilt, I just admire that so much. And I felt like I need to become a quilter.
That's right, because you don't
done it.
You don't quilt yet.
No, not yet, but it's been on my to-do list for since I was pretty young. I don't know why I haven't. I think I'm better at coming up with ideas than actually making something with my hand. But
now,
my mom quilts.
I was just going to say, your mom quilts, so.
She does.
So she's having fun with your fabric lines?
Oh, she loves it. She thinks it's the best thing to be able to get the fabrics, and then she'll ask me to, she likes for me to put combinations of fabric together and say, okay, take these and make a quilt. And then she makes it happen.
Ah, and out at Moda, they probably have some patterns to use with your, I mean, I know they do. They have patterns to use with your designs.
They do. They do. And I know they have a really cute one with the Bartholomew's Reef was the last collection that we released.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a quilt hanging at the quilt show that I think is so cute.
Yeah, so people can go to unitednotions.com and on the either can go via the designer thing and look for Tim and Beck, or you can go into the actual pages where all the design information, all the fabric lines are, and put in your name, Tim and Beck, A-N-D, Tim, A-N-D-B-E-C-K. So that'll let you find the fabrics. So tell me real quick, you guys have like crazy hobbies. You're real outdoor people.
We are. We definitely are. And we just moved to Southern Utah, which it feels to me like a surfer moving to Hawaii. We just moved to a spot that is so outdoor friendly.
Yeah. Oh, how awesome. Well, Beck, this has been so much fun. I know I'm not going to see you I'm not going to see you this trade show, but hopefully in the fall, right?
Yes, for sure. And maybe we'll be near each other again so we can
Yes, so great. Everybody needs to visit Tim and Beck at their Facebook page. And this is American Patchwork and Quilting's magazine's radio show, which is podcasted. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit me at patsloan.com. Hope you might visit me when I'm out on the road somewhere teaching or giving my talk. I'd love to meet you. And you can go to allpeoplequilt.com and download free patterns. Go watch videos. We'll be back next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.